Welcome to Base My Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, imagine for a second that you were standing next to this incredibly powerful engine.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right. And it is just revving wildly. I mean, the RPMs are climbing and climbing. It's burning through fuel faster than ever, and it's generating all this intense heat and frantic activity. But when you look down, you realize the wheels aren't turning at all. The drive shaft is just completely dead.
Oh, wow. So it's basically an engine that's actively destroying itself from the inside out, right?
Yeah.
Because all that energy being generated, well, it has nowhere productive to go.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I want you to consider what happens when this exact scenario plays out, but not in a mechanical vehicle. Inside yourselves. Inside human biology.
Yeah, that's a terrifying thought.
Right. So today, our deep dive is looking at a biological engine. We're talking about the...
Just a massive, massive biological undertaking.
It really is. We are exploring this highly compelling physiological paradox. Like, how can a single microscopic typo in the genetic blueprint for this cellular turbine effectively poison the entire system?
And, you know, we're going to unpack exactly how this molecular misstep revs the engine out of control, cuts the power to the rest of the cell, and ultimately leads to severe life-altering neurological conditions.
Yeah. We are going to look at how a multi-tiered approach, moving from atomic structural maps to living microscopic worms and then finally to human cells, actually solved the mystery of how this physiological crash happens.
It really is an incredible piece of detective work.
Today we celebrate the work of the international research team spanning Washington University in St. Louis, the University of Colorado, the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, Baylor College of Medicine, the Undiagnosed Diseases Network, and others who have advanced our understanding of mitochondrial diseases and the genetic mechanisms of complex V deficiency.
And to really appreciate the scale of what this team achieved, I think we first need to build a mental picture of the biological machine at the center of the research.
Right. We need to know what we're looking at.
Exactly. So we are looking at oxidative phosphorylation, and specifically an enzyme complex known as ATP synthase, or, you know, in the scientific literature, you'll frequently hear referred to as complex V.
I always find it incredibly helpful to visualize ATP synthase as a literal factory assembly line, or, well, better yet, a microscopic hydroelectric turbine.
Oh yeah, the dam analogy is perfect.
Right. It basically functions as a mechanical motor, and it's sitting right there inside the inner membrane of your mitochondria.
The resemblance to a mechanical motor is just striking. I mean, it consists of two main structural domains. First, you have the S0 domain, which is a rotor embedded directly in the mitochondrial membrane.
Like the actual water wheel in a hydroelectric dam?
Yes, exactly like the water wheel. And then you have the F1 domain, which kind of protrudes out into the cell interior. That part is the catalytic head. It's the part of the factory that actually manufactures the final product.
And there's a piece connecting them, right?
Right. Connecting the water wheel to that catalytic head is this central rotating stock.
So just to make sure we're all on the same page, your body pumps protons across the mitochondrial membrane, building up a gradient. It's building up pressure.
Yes, tons of pressure.
And when those protons finally flow back through the membrane, literally just like water rushing over a dam, they physically spin that F0 rotor.
They do. They spin it rapidly.
And the spinning rotor turns the central stock, and that stock rotates inside the F1 catalytic head. It's just wild to think about this happening inside us right now.
It really is. And, you know, to make that rotation actually translate into chemical energy, that F1 catalytic head is built in a highly specific way.
It's not just a solid chunk of protein, is it?
No, not at all. It isn't just one solid piece of machinery. It is a ring made of six alternating subunits, specifically three alpha subunits and three beta subunits.
Like slices of a pie.
Exactly like slices of a pie. They slot together perfectly, alternating around the ring. And as that central stalk rotates inside them, it physically forces those alpha and beta slices to repeatedly change shape.
Oh, wow. So the mechanical movement causes a shapeshift.
Right. And that physical shapeshifting literally squeezes ADP and phosphate molecules together to manufacture ATP.
And, you know, for anyone listening, ATP is the fundamental energy currency of your cells. Every single time you take a breath or fire a neuron to form a thought or contract a muscle to take a step, you are spending ATP.
It's the fuel for basically everything we do.
Yeah, and every single full rotation of this microscopic turbine produces exactly three molecules of ATP. But the whole thing, the entire process, relies on those three alpha subunits and three beta subunits interlocking flawlessly.
Right, they have to be perfect.
If that structure is compromised, well, the energy supply chain collapses. Which brings us to the human patients at the center of this research.
Right, so there were six individuals in this study, ranging from young children to teenagers, and they presented in the clinic with a really complex, overlapping set of severe neurological phenotypes.
We're talking about global developmental delays, right?
Yes, global developmental delays, intellectual disability, and profound movement disorders. Several patients exhibited central hypotonia, meaning they had extremely low muscle tone in their core.
But then at the same time, they had spasticity in their limbs.
Exactly. Spasticity and dystonia in their extremities. It's a devastating combination.
But when you think about the underlying biology, those symptoms make devastating sense, don't they? I mean, neurons and muscles require massive, continuous supplies of ATP just to fire and to contract.
They do. They're the most energy-hungry tissues in the body.
And they also require ATP to relax. So when there is a systemic energy failure at the cellular level, the brain just cannot properly send signals, and the muscles can't properly execute them.
Right, which leads to those profound, involuntary muscle contractions and delays in walking or speaking.
Basically, these patients were experiencing a localized power grid failure in their most critical organs. So naturally, clinicians sequenced their genomes to find the broken link in the grid.
And what they found through clinical sequencing was this genetic puzzle that completely contradicted the established rules of mitochondrial disease.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting. What did they find?
Well, all six patients shared de novo missense variants in the ATP5F1A gene.
Let's break that down a bit. So de novo means the mutation wasn't inherited from the parents, right? It was just a spontaneous typo that occurred during early embryonic development.
Exactly. And a missense variant means just one single molecular letter in the DNA code got swapped out for the wrong one.
So that changes just one amino acid building block in the final protein.
Just one. But crucially, that ATP5F1A gene contains the blueprint for building the alpha subunit of that ATP synthase turbine we were just talking about.
Ah, okay. The pie slices.
Right. And historically, when clinicians identify complex V defects, they are almost always recessive.
Meaning you have to inherit two faulty copies of the gene, one from your mother and one from your father, for the disease to actually manifest.
Right. Because normally, if you have one faulty copy and one healthy copy, the healthy copy just goes ahead and produces enough functional protein to keep the cellular factory running. You wouldn't see any noticeable symptoms.
But these six patients, however, were heterozygous. They only carried one mutated copy of the gene alongside one perfectly healthy wild-type copy.
Exactly. So the core question driving this entire investigation was, well, how does a single mutated copy of this specific gene override the healthy copy and cause such a dominant, devastating disease?
Yeah, if your cellular factory is still manufacturing healthy alpha subunits 50% of the time, why does the entire assembly line crash?
It's a huge mystery. Because in genetics, finding a mutation like this is really just the beginning.
Right. It just gets classified as a variant of uncertain significance, a VUS.
Exactly. So to prove that this specific typo is actually the culprit, the researchers couldn't just rely on the genetic sequence. They had to look at the physical machinery itself.
If we suspect the alpha subunits are somehow causing the assembly line to fail, the logical first step is to map out where these typos actually sit on the turbine, right? Did they do that?
They did. Using these advanced cryo-electron microscopy models of human ATP synthase, they performed structural mapping.
Cryo-EM is just unbelievable technology.
It really is. So they looked at four specific single-letter typos identified in the patients, and they mapped their exact physical locations onto the 3D protein structure.
And let me guess, they weren't just randomly scattered across the protein, were they?
No, not at all. The localization was remarkably precise. All four variants mapped directly to the contact points.
The contact points.
Yeah, these are the critical junctions where the alpha subunit physically touches the beta subunit, or where it interacts directly with that central rotating stalk.
Oh, wow. Think back to our pie slices. If you change the physical shape of the alpha subunit right at the exact seam where it's supposed to lock into the beta subunit, it is, it's like inserting a warped gear into a transmission.
That is a perfect way to put it.
The pieces just can no longer interlock smoothly. The structural integrity of the entire catalytic ring is compromised.
Right, but a structural model showing a warped gear is compelling, sure, but it's still just a model. To really prove causality, they needed to observe what that warped gear actually does inside a living organism.
So what did they do?
They utilized CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing to insert these exact human mutations into the genome of C. elegans, which are, you know, microscopic nematode worms.
Okay, hold on. A listener might be wondering why on earth we are trying to understand a highly complex human neurological disorder by looking at a transparent worm that lives in dirt. I mean, that seems like a massive leap.
I know, it sounds wild, but it really highlights the sheer power of evolutionary conservation. The human ATP5F1A gene has a direct counterpart in the nematode worm called the ADP1 gene.
And they're similar.
The genetic sequence is 78% identical.
78%. That is an astonishing level of similarity for species separated by hundreds of millions of years of evolution.
It's because ATP synthase is fundamentally crucial to eukaryotic life on Earth. Evolution simply hasn't allowed the core machinery to change.
Don't fix what isn't broken.
Exactly. The biological mechanics are heavily conserved. So researchers didn't need to invent any theoretical cross-species equivalences. They just edited the exact corresponding amino acids in the worm's genome and watched the fundamental biology of mitochondrial stress unfold in a living, moving organism.
And they engineered the worms with this brilliant visual indicator, didn't they? Like a genetic alarm system.
They did. They set it up so that whenever a specific protein senses the mitochondria are failing, it rushes to the nucleus and literally turns on a green fluorescent glow.
So the more stressed the mitochondria become, the brighter the worms glow under a microscope. That is incredibly clever.
It's a great tool. And the worms carrying the patient variants illuminated brightly. Their mitochondria were visibly abnormal, appearing globular, rather than their healthy sort of tubular shape.
So the mutation definitely broke the system.
Yes, but the most revealing finding came from a rescue experiment. The researchers took these sick, glowing worms and injected them with extra copies of the healthy wild-type gene.
And the glowing stopped, right? The mitochondrial stress was rescued.
Completely rescued.
Okay, if adding extra healthy copies fixes the cellular stress, that tells me the root problem wasn't merely a lack of healthy subunits. The mutated subunits must be actively poisoning the assembly process.
Exactly. That is the defining characteristic of a dominant negative mechanism. The faulty subunits don't just fail to work. They actively interfere with the healthy subunits, bringing down the entire complex.
Wow.
And to grasp the sheer scale of the destruction, we have to look at the math of how the turbine is assembled.
Right. Okay, let's walk through this. Picture flipping a coin. Every single ATP synthase turbine requires exactly 3 alpha subunits.
Right. 3 slots to fill.
So in a patient with this heterozygous variant, the cellular factory is tossing out a 50-50 mix of healthy subunits and warped subunits. When the cell goes to build a turbine, it grabs a subunit at random.
It's totally blind assembly.
Right. So heads, it grabs a healthy one. Tails, it grabs a warped one. To assemble a perfectly functional turbine, the cell needs to flip heads 3 times in a row.
And mathematically, that is 1/2 multiplied by 1/2 multiplied by 1/2.
Which is 1/8. There is only a 12.5% chance of assembling a turbine using exclusively healthy subunits.
Just 12.5%.
That means the remaining 7/8, 87.5% of all the turbines the body attempts to build, will contain at least one poisoned, warped gear.
It's staggering when you put it like that.
I mean, think about your own body right now. Think about trying to power your brain, your heart, your muscles, when nearly 90% of your cellular engines are structurally compromised from the moment they're built.
And because those turbines contain warped gears at the contact points, they become incredibly unstable. The research team actually analyzed protein levels in the patient's actual cells and found that the overall abundance of complex V was markedly reduced.
So the body tries to build the turbines, they fail to fit together correctly, and then the cellular cleanup machinery just shreds them.
Basically, yes. They get degraded.
But wait, that raises a critical question. If 87.5% of the energy turbines are poisoned and degraded, how are these patients surviving at all? We know that recessive mutations, which completely wipe out complex V production, are typically fatal shortly after birth.
Right, and the survival of these patients actually hinges on that dominant negative math we just talked about.
But 12.5%.
Exactly, that 12.5% of perfectly healthy turbines, that tiny improbable fraction, is just enough to maintain baseline cellular function and keep the patient alive.
Wow.
However, it falls drastically short of the immense energy demands of the nervous system and musculature as the child grows, which is why the severe neurological symptoms present as they develop.
Okay, so we have a structural model showing the warped gear. and we have a living worm model proving the dominant negative poison. But to fully bridge the gap to human disease, we really have to look at the metabolism of the patients themselves.
And they did. The researchers took skin fibroblasts directly from the patients and ran them through a seahorse bioanalyzer.
And that tracks oxygen consumption, right?
Exactly. It tracks exactly how much oxygen the cells consume and how much ATP they produce in real time.
Okay, so what did it show?
Well, as expected, the bioanalyzer confirmed that the actual production of APP was significantly reduced. The turbines were failing to manufacture the energy currency. But the analysis of oxygen consumption revealed this crazy paradox.
What kind of paradox? Because if the cells are struggling to make ATP and the turbines are broken, you would naturally assume the whole metabolic process is just slowing down.
Right, but the patient cells exhibited higher basal and maximal oxygen consumption than healthy cells.
Wait, higher?
Yes.
Yeah.
They were breathing harder, they were consuming more oxygen.
But if a cell is consuming more oxygen, shouldn't it be generating more ATP?
Under normal conditions, absolutely yes. But this discrepancy points to a phenomenon known as uncoupled oxidative phosphorylation.
Uncoupled. Okay, explain that.
Let's return to our hydroelectric dam analogy. The electron transport chain acts as the river, pumping protons across the membrane to build up a massive amount of water pressure. And oxygen is consumed at the very end of that process to keep the current flowing.
Got it.
In a healthy cell, that water pressure is forced smoothly through the ATP synthase turbine, turning the rotor and manufacturing ATP. The flow of protons is coupled to the production of energy.
But in these patients, the turbines have warped gears. The alpha, beta, and central stalk subunits aren't sealing tightly together anymore.
Exactly. The dam basically has a leak.
Oh, I see.
The protons, all that built-up pressure, are just slipping through the gaps in the compromised turbine without efficiently turning the rotor.
So the pressure is just wasted.
Yes. And the cell senses this desperate shortage of ATP, so it frantically burns more fuel and consumes more oxygen, attempting to pump an even greater volume of protons to somehow restore the pressure.
So the engine is revving out of control. The accelerator is basically pinned to the floor. Fuel and oxygen are being burned at record speed to pump those protons. But because the transmission is shot, because the turbine is uncoupled, the wheels just aren't turning.
That's exactly it. The energy dissipates, the membrane potential drops, and the ATP levels crash entirely.
It is just a profound systemic metabolic crisis. And understanding this specific mechanism, this uncoupled revving engine, is vital, isn't it? Because it explains the distinct clinical reality of these patients compared to others.
It absolutely is. Because there are other mutations in the exact same gene. For example, there was a previously reported mutation in the ATP5F1A gene, specifically at residue 207.
Okay, and what happens with that one?
Patients with that variant also experience severe neonatal symptoms. But their clinical journey was entirely different. By 18 months of age, the symptoms in patients with the residue 207 variant actually largely resolved.
Wait, resolved? How?
When researchers look at cells with that specific mutation, they exhibit decreased oxygen consumption. The engine isn't revving out of control, It is just running sluggishly. And eventually, the cellular metabolism sort of adapts and stabilizes.
Contrast that with the variants we were discussing today, like the typo at residue 182. They cause this uncoupled high oxygen respiration.
Right. The engine is actively destroying the proton gradient.
And the patient's neurological symptoms do not resolve. They are static, or they progressively worsen over time.
It delivers a really sobering lesson for modern genetics. You know, yeah. You cannot simply identify a mutated gene and assume you understand the mechanism of the disease.
Right, because a typo at one location creates a sluggish engine that the body can eventually accommodate. But a typo just a few amino acids away creates a leaking, revving engine that inflicts permanent neurological damage.
Exactly. And this realization represents a major diagnostic shift for the field. With the addition of the 6 probands in this study, bringing the total to 12 reported individuals, ATP5F1A is now officially recognized as the most frequent nuclear genome cause of complex V deficiency.
That is a massive paradigm shift.
It is. It establishes a completely new blueprint for clinical practice. When doctors run a genetic screen and identify a mysterious variant of uncertain significance in a patient's mitochondrial DNA, simply reading the genetic sequence is no longer sufficient.
Right, you need a multi-tiered functional toolkit. You need the Seahorse bioanalyzer to check the oxygen consumption and identify if the engine is uncoupled.
Yeah.
And you need proteomics to see if the body is degrading the unstable proteins.
Absolutely.
And you need model organisms, like our little dirt worms, C. elegans, to confirm the dominant negative mechanism. Understanding exactly how the variant breaks the cell is the mandatory first step before we can even conceptualize targeted treatments.
You cannot repair transmission if you don't know which specific gear is slipping.
I love that. So ultimately, the central insight here is that heterozygous missense variants in the ATP5F1A gene cause severe neurological disorders by acting as a dominant negative poison within complex V.
Exactly. And this structural disruption causes a warped turbine, leading to uncoupled oxidative phosphorylation. The cellular engine burns excessive oxygen in a desperate attempt to maintain power, but it just completely fails to produce the vital ATP required by the brain and muscles.
It's tragic, but also fascinating. So I leave you with this. What does this mean for the future of diagnosing and potentially treating other mystery rare diseases where standard genetic rules like recessive inheritance just don't seem to apply? How many other biological engines are out there revving out of control, waiting for us to find the single warped gear that is causing the system to crash? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Click.